My name is Lori Packer, and I'm at the University of Rochester. My official title is web editor. It's one of those odd communications titles that doesn't really mean anything. I haven't edited anything in a long time. I basically do, I'm responsible for designing and maintaining the university's homepage and a lot of the central administrative pages and a lot of the social media profiles that we have out and about. So when I first put together this presentation, I had a very specific story in mind. Actually, this happened this summer. I wanted to start by telling you a true story. None of the names have been changed because no one's innocent. Last summer, I was sitting in my office, as I often do, and I got one of my boss's famous cryptic emails at about 10 o'clock in the morning saying, "Lori, how many university presidents are on Facebook?" Sent from my iPhone. And I thought, I don't know, I'm going to go with like 12. I have no idea. No clue. But in my head, I thought that. But in reply to my boss, I said, "I have to imagine the number's fairly small. Do you want me to go and look and see if I can find any examples? Would that be useful?" So I go to Facebook and I start looking around trying to find university presidents on Facebook, you know, searching for some names of people that I know are university presidents. I actually found two, and I was compiling a little list. I got a second email from our president's administrative assistant, who is also my spouse's boss, or my boss's spouse, sorry, saying, "Lori, we're having a meeting in the president's conference room right now to talk about Facebook. Can you join us?" And I thought, oh God, what fresh hell is this? I checked out our university's Facebook page real quick to make sure nothing had exploded that I wasn't aware of, that I was going to be asked to either explain or, worse yet, remove. And everything was fine. Everything was, you know, sizzling over nicely. So I grabbed my notebook and ran upstairs. I get to the conference room, and in addition to my boss and my boss's spouse, the university president's senior administrative assistant was sitting in there. The legal counsel from our law office was sitting in there. Our tech support person, our executive IT person who does the desktop support for the executive folks, the provost executive assistant, the board of trustees executive assistant, and one other random person. So there was like 8 people in this conference room. And I walk in, and the long story short is our president had received what turned out to be a Facebook invite that, well, from one of our trustees. And the boilerplate language says something to the effect of, "Share stories, share photos, become a friend on Facebook." They misunderstood that to mean that this particular trustee was trying to share specific photos, like she had photos that she was trying to send to Joel. And he couldn't get them because he wasn't on Facebook, so he convened this group to find out how he could get these photos so that he could watch or view them because they were sent by the trustee. The immediate question, though, that they needed me for was, of those 8 people in the room, nobody had a Facebook profile, so they could not log on to Facebook to even see what this message was about. So I had to, you know, get on the presentation machine in the conference room and log into my Facebook page so they could look at the invite, look at the mail, and kind of poke around. So that turned into a conversation about, should the president have a Facebook page? Once I figured out, I was like, no, she's not actually sending him any specific photos. She probably just joined Facebook, and she's looking for people to invite, and she knows your email address, and she invited you. Now the question is, should Joel have a Facebook page? That kind of went back and forth for a while, and I'll get to this a little bit later, but the main conclusion of this story, to finish it off, was that no, Joel should not have a Facebook page, because Joel doesn't want a Facebook page. If he wants one, fantastic, but if you are on Facebook, you have to do it because you want to do it. He doesn't have to do it. He doesn't have to accept an invitation to somebody. And worse yet, he doesn't have to have one that he never maintains, that his secretary is maintaining, or just, you know, sits out there like someone pretending to be the president. So no, our president does not have a Facebook page. But that story was kind of illustrative to me. I thought it would be a great kickoff for this revamped version of this presentation, because it really shows you, or gives you an indication, I think, of some of the obstacles that we face when we're trying to talk to other folks in our units across our universities about social media generally. So when I was putting this presentation together for this year, I asked the Twitter sphere, I asked you all, about your experiences with talking to your bosses about Twitter and social media. So I put out a little call: when you talk to your boss about Twitter or any social media idea, what do you say? What's worked? And I got a couple of responses, which was cool because they were from both ends of the spectrum. Jenny replied saying, "I say, hey, I'm going to do this fun new thing on insert social media," and they say, "Cool, go for it." So that's what Jenny's found at her place. But then Tony Dunn replied saying, there's no point talking to anyone on my campus about Twitter. Management doesn't get Twitter or social media in general. So what are some of the obstacles that we face when we're trying to talk to folks who maybe don't do this for a living? What is interesting or why social media ideas are valuable? The first one is that Twitter specifically, and I'm going to be picking on Twitter a little bit during this presentation, but it's really about social media. I'm going to be using Twitter as more of an example. And you might notice that throughout my presentation, I did my entire presentation last year as tweets. So each slide is a tweet. That was a really cool idea. I thought last year, not knowing that by the time I got to Cincinnati this year, my Twitter profile picture of me sitting in my baseball hat at Citizens Bank Ballpark in my Phillies hat on the day after the Cincinnati Reds swept the Phillies in Cincinnati might be a little inappropriate. So any locals in the audience, please don't throw things till I'm done. But that is me at the Phillies game with my Phillies hat. The first obstacle specifically with Twitter, and for a lot of these social media tools, they're easy to mock. Twitter is easy to mock. It's called Twitter, number one. It comes with all sorts of weird vocabulary. You have to go to meetings and speak like an intelligent human being about tweets and retweets and DMs and at replies and stuff that people have no idea what you're talking about. These are all direct quotes from people I work with and for. If you're on Twitter, does that make you a twit or a tweeter? Ha ha ha. And I get this one before most meetings with the same guy. So Lori, what's going on in MySpace or Facebook? Ha ha ha. The second obstacle with these folks is that they know about these tools, but they don't know about these tools. You know, they're smart people. They work in higher ed, so they've obviously heard of Twitter. They've heard of Facebook. When the New York Times is writing articles about, you know, senators tweeting from the floor of Congress during Barack Obama's State of the Union address, you do hit a sort of a tipping point. So they've heard about these things, but they don't, for the most part, sort of a generalization, but for the most part, they don't use them. So they don't really know, but they think they know. I answer this question a lot. I'm brushing my teeth, I'm eating my pizza. I mean, who cares? Where people think that that's what Twitter specifically in this case is about. And Twitter's a little bit to blame for this. When they first started, if you remember before new Twitter or Twitter 2.0, there was a simple little screen that just said, what are you doing? And that idea, because it was so simple, which was why it was so cool, also got kind of imprinted in people's minds about that that's what Twitter was for and that's all that it's for. And it's not really what are you doing? It's not like a litany of every step I do through my day. It's more, you know, what am I doing? What am I experiencing? What am I reacting to? What am I learning? What am I finding? What do I feel like sharing with you? And yeah, sometimes I do want to know that you're eating your pizza if it's really good pizza and I'm in Boston and I don't know anything about Boston pizza. That is valuable to me too. So there is some personality, but it's not just a list of what am I doing. And that can sometimes be a misperception that you have to correct. And those first two obstacles, these quotes again, I think they kind of go hand in hand. The fact that Twitter is easy to mock and the fact that people don't really know how to use it or what it's for. We kind of mock what we don't understand. You know, it kind of it inoculates you against embarrassment if you can make fun of something if you're not willing to admit that you don't understand it. This quote in particular, what's going on in my face in Facebook, that was a guy who legitimately slipped and called Facebook Spacebook, and it was kind of funny, and we all laughed. But now it's sort of like his little joke to ask. He's basically asking me, so what are you doing in social media, like to report on my social media activities, but that's the way that he asks. But he does that because like he's a great guy, but he's, you know, if he's not on the tools himself, he doesn't want to admit maybe that this is something that's new to him, it's not something he's participating in. So you kind of inoculate yourself against embarrassment by making fun of it. Obstacle number three, shouldn't you be working? There is a perception that Facebook and Twitter are just fun and games. They're free, number one, monetarily free. They have a certain fun factor about them that goes a long way to making them as useful as they are. If there wasn't that fun factor to these social sites, I don't think we would use them nearly as much. But it is definitely work. It is someone's job. It will become someone's job if you start doing anything real in social media. It will become someone's job to keep up with this stuff and to maintain it and to feed it, as we'll see later. But if it's not considered work, you won't get the resources you need to do it and do it well, if it's just considered fun and games. Just because it's fun doesn't mean it's not work. Maintaining a social media presence will be a task that someone or someones will need to take on, is my argument. And I would say that along the way, whenever you get an opportunity, whether you're just broaching an idea or starting a new project or trying to get more resources for an existing project, this is a statement you need to kind of make over and over again. When someone says, we need to have a Facebook page, great, who's going to maintain it? It's going to be someone's job. It's not going to exist on its own. You don't create it and set it and forget it. Someone needs to be doing something with it. Who in your office is going to do this? Is it a group? Is it one person? Because it's going to be someone's job. Obstacle number 4, justify often equals quantify. Yeah, that one's kind of a bummer. This one kind of bums me out because I'm kind of on, and I've been starting to learn, trying to learn a little bit more about the metric side of all of this stuff. There's a book, this is the only one I've been able to find, by Jim Stern called Social Media Metrics. You may have other books that you've been able to check out on this. This is coming more from a corporate standpoint. I think a lot of these probably are trying to do social media marketing, but he has some interesting ideas about how you can start to measure things. Honestly, I don't do a lot of anything like the metrics that I do on the website. I don't do for, other than knowing sort of follower counts and how many times we've been listed and how many times things get retweeted. And I honestly don't know how to put, especially a dollar sign number around those things. I'm more one of those, you know, how do you measure the value of conversation, people? And I know it can't stay like that forever. I know there needs to be kind of real data around these things. But right now, I'm not the expert on that side of things. But I am trying to do more on that front. So what can we do to overcome these obstacles and actually talk to our bosses about Twitter? Over the last few years, I've done a series of presentations, or I've been asked to do a bunch of presentations to different groups in our university, to the Board of Trustees, to the President's Cabinet, to some of the deans and department chairs, really just about, you know, can you come and talk to us? We noticed you maintain the university's Facebook page, can you come and talk to us about Facebook? Or we noticed you're on Twitter, can you come and talk to us about Twitter? And over that, the last couple of years now, I've helped landed on a couple of tips, I think, that kind of just help you have that conversation with folks who maybe don't use these tools themselves. And I should say, too, if anyone has any questions or comments as I'm going along, just please feel free to chime in. If you've had other experiences or just have a question you'd like to ask, feel free. So how do we even get started? I would argue that the very first thing we need to do is convince our bosses that this stuff is real. I think because of the fun factor and because there's no cost involved and because it just feels like, you know, something the kids are doing, for lack of a better word, that it's not a real communications vehicle, it's not a real tool that you could be using or should be using. So we need to convince our bosses that this stuff is real. Oops. And to do that, statistics can be useful door openers. I said earlier I don't have a lot of good data on or a lot of good information yet about individual social media metrics, but there are some statistics that can really kind of open somebody's eyes, open some doors to just establishing the fact that, you know what, this is not going away. This is not Santa Claus. This is real stuff that we need to be paying attention to. And your bosses might be forgiven for thinking that something like Twitter is the next dot-com bubble. If they remember the pets.com sock puppet being thrown on the dustbin of history, they might think, oh, this is just another one of those. So some statistics, some overall statistics might help make the case. Oops. So this is a slide from a presentation that's now about a year and a half old, from March 2009. So at that time, and this was one of those very basic overview, sort of what is social media presentations. At that time, I described Facebook and what it was. It's the flagship social site for college students and young professionals. And at that time, it had just turned 5 years old in March 2009, had 175 million active users. The 99% figure was the number of incoming freshmen who already had a Facebook profile. That was a study from a college at Amherst. I don't have any updated data on that, but I still believe it. There were 300,000 new users being added a month. Yes? Yes. And our university page had, at that time, 4,300 fans. 300,000 users a day. Sorry, not a month, a day. If I were to update that slide for today, professionally, of course. jump ahead to now, 6.5 years later. Facebook is 6.5 years now. It now six and a half years old. It now has 500 million active users. These are Facebook's own numbers. And they are growing at a rate of 475,000 new users a day. And our university Facebook page has 8,800 followers. So that's in the span of a year and a half. When I first showed this slide about the 175 million active users, I mentioned in the room that, you know, if Facebook were a country, it would be the sixth largest country in the world. More than Brazil, more than Bangladesh, more than Pakistan. Now, if Facebook were a country, it would be the third largest country in the world, behind only the United States and China. And there were a couple of trustees in the room who were members of the president's cabinet in the room who were like, just sort of smiled and were kind of like, really? Really? Kind of looking back and forth at each other. And it seemed to be, it kind of, a little light bulb went off. It kind of sunk in with them. They're like, really? That many people are using Facebook? So the next thing I would do in these meetings is let them see for themselves and take them for a test drive. So you may have seen, actually let me back up a little bit. Yeah. You may have seen and experienced yourself people doing a demo of Twitter for someone else who's never experienced Twitter. So they might send out a tweet saying, hi, I'm showing Twitter to a friend of mine who wants to say hello. And you have friends from, you know, Seattle and LA and Pennsylvania and New York saying, hi friend, welcome to Twitter. And it never fails, it's very simple. It's been done a lot now. It never fails to impress the person you're showing. Because as soon as they start seeing the responses that your friends are sending back to you from these far-flung corners in real time, it starts to make them think about the capabilities or the possibilities and starts to let them have some ideas. This is our engineering school dean, Dean Clark, and he started this last year. He was a new dean at the time, and he started a Facebook or a Twitter profile for himself. And he sent out this tweet. This was like the second or third thing he ever tweeted, saying the first student to call our office at the phone number will receive a University of Rochester banner and a decal. He also sent it. I just realized this just when I was putting this presentation together again. He sent it at 6:17 in the morning. Which I thought was kind of weird. I didn't notice that last time. But he got a reply at 6:18 in the morning. And that was his response, saying, wow, that was quick. And he was just like floored. I thought it was cute that he used a phone number. So, you know, he didn't just say retweet this. He's like, call me on my phone. Ringy ding ding. but it worked. It was something he wanted. You know, we had a new engineering publicist in our office who wanted to try and experiment with the new dean, and he was game. And he gave it a whirl. Gotta say, he was very kind of out of the gate, excited. And then it kind of fell down again. And then as the semester just started this past month, he's sort of back and trying it again. So we'll see. It's definitely an experiment, a work in progress with Dean Clark. Okay. So it's much easier to let them see the conversation that's going on than to try to tell them for yourselves. That's where that demo comes in. That's where what Dean Clark did with his experiment with the phone comes in. The other thing that I would do in those meetings, for example, when I would show people Facebook, is I actually would bring up, this is a slide from another presentation, I would bring up my Facebook page and say, you know, at first I'd have this slide, this is me on Facebook, and then I'd go to Facebook and log in, sort of making a joke about, you know, I hope none of my friends are up to anything naughty, while actually really seriously hoping none of my friends are up to anything naughty. And the coolest thing, and you kind of have to talk at a very simple but not simplistic level, if that makes sense. Because these are very smart people, these are administrators. They don't need someone like me coming and sort of explaining to them what Facebook is, but they kind of do. So you need to kind of play that game a little bit. And I think being funny and having a little bit of humor about it works, but you really have to talk about it at a simpler level. The thing that people, the light bulbs go off and they get kind of excited about when they see happening and the kind of questions that you get are things like, you know, I'll go through my little feed, you know, my wall, and you'll see things like, you know, Shelley Keith posting something about her housewarming party. And I'm like, oh, that's my friend in Arkansas. She's having a housewarming party this weekend. That's my sister and pictures of her new baby. And they'll ask questions like, so when someone writes something on the Facebook, you see it? Like it shows up on the stream and or on the whatever that is, the wall, the feed? And you say, yeah. And like, so if you wrote something back, they'd see it on their feed? And you go, yeah, it's pretty cool. It's really fun. If my friend's got a film opening in, my friend the filmmaker has a movie opening in LA, and he'll post something on his page about it, and everybody comments back, and you see all the comments, and that's when they start to kind of have little light bulb moments where they start to understand it. And it's kind of a conversation that you really, I think, have to have at someone's desk while they're kind of, maybe they don't have a Facebook page themselves, or you have to have it live in a meeting. Instead of trying to explain that there are these things called pages and profiles and status updates and comments, you kind of need to walk them through it, and then they get it. And it's fun to see. It's fun to see when people actually understand the purpose of something that they maybe kind of knew about but didn't try themselves. The other thing they may start to do, though, is get a little nervous. At this point, your boss might start to get scared. Another piece of the demo that I like to do when I show people stuff on Facebook and Twitter or YouTube is, and if you haven't done this with your bosses, I highly recommend it. If you can get, like Dan Frommelt said in his presentation today, have courage. Do one brave thing today and then run like hell. So this is your one brave thing. Go onto Twitter or YouTube especially, and search for the name of your institution. And just see what comes up, because something will. And it's probably not something that anyone at your office had anything to do with, and that's probably a great thing, and that's probably a not so great thing, depending on what comes back. And this is when your boss might start to get really scared. Why is all this stuff out there? What, can you do something about that? And like, nope, absolutely not. I don't even want to. I think it's fine that it's out there. Luckily, we have a acapella group that has an amazing YouTube channel. If you do a search for University of Rochester, like the first 18 of 20 videos you see will be there. Acapella concert videos, which is fine by me. They're a great group and they do a lot of great stuff. But this is the point where you have to start, I would argue, making the point over and over and over again, you're not gonna have to make it just once, that it's not about control, it's about authenticity. This is the authentic voice of your institution, or a authentic voice of your institution. It's coming from your students, your faculty, your staff, your alumni. Why would you want to control that? Why would you want to stop that? So this is a slide from that earlier College Dean presentation that I like to end on when I gave that presentation, but I've moved it up a little bit in this one, where I kind of try to make that point a little clearer that the line is between participation and domination. You want to participate, but not dominate the conversation. The first point, this is like the flip side of that. When something good happens, I've had this comment sometimes where we'll post something to the Facebook page and you'll get like 50 comments and 60 likes and you're all excited. And people will say, hey, this amazing spontaneous serendipitous thing just happened. Let's do it again. There's this sort of temptation. Because in my office, I don't know about you guys, but in my office, they're PR people. They're used to, they're not doing their job if they're not affecting the message that comes out at the end of the day. That's their job. Their job is to get more than their fair share of traditional media coverage. If they're getting their fair share, then they don't need PR people. They need to get more of their fair share. So when something good happens, they get excited and they want to do it again. And I'm kind of like, well, we can't, I didn't know what that would. I posted a picture of the our dining hall renovations and I thought it would get a lot of response because it's food and everybody likes to complain about food. But everyone thought it was great and they were all excited about, it was just construction photos, who knew? You post construction photos and people go crazy. Could we do something like that again with the installation of the new heater chiller plant? Like, I doubt it. I'll post a picture of it, but I don't really know why. It was because it was a dining hall. So there's this temptation to want to sort of spin things out of, spin gold out of straw. And sometimes you can't, sometimes you can do that, sometimes you can't. But what's more important is that I don't think that can be your mindset going in. It'll happen and it's great, but I don't think you can have as your mindset, we're gonna make such and such happen. Because the good things that'll happen will be most of the time things that you would never have predicted. So the second point kind of gets to that, that institutions in this new world, they need to be able to find their feet in this virtual world and learn that it's about contribution and not control. You need to contribute to the conversation but not control it. And then the last point I try to make for these guys is that we're not lame ducks here. We're not like, it's not that we don't have any role to play at all. I'll get to this a little bit more later. But, excuse me, our role above all else, I think, is to be useful. To give them, our audience, something that they can use, something they can do, something they can have fun with, something that they can't get from anybody else, and then get out of their way. I work in a communications office. We have photographers, we have videographers, we have writers, we have content possibilities coming out our ears. So we have stuff to offer. We have really, you know, interesting stories that we can tell and great, you know, writing and all that kind of stuff. They can't necessarily get the kind of stuff that we do from anywhere else. So your content is valuable to these conversations, but it's not the only piece of it. It's not the only thing that's ever going to be out there. That's your contribution. You need to learn to participate, but not dominate these conversations. This was a quote that kind of stuck with me from, I can't remember his actual name. He's from Wired Magazine, Scott Ross something. Where newspapers and traditional media, and I think we in higher ed fall into this category sometimes too, they kind of want to go social or do something social. And in the newspaper space, what they did was, in his opinion, turn on comments and then walk out of the room. Okay, I'm being social now, I'm being interactive, there's a comments feature. But that's really not the end of the story. Being social is actually pretty hard work. It's kind of like being the host of a party, right? And I would argue that at that party, your content is the cocktails and nibbles. Your job as the host of a party, think about all the preparation that you do for a party. Your job as the host of the party is not to dominate the conversation, not to keep everybody from talking to everybody else. Your job is to create an environment that people want to be in and hope that they enjoy each other's company and to provide them something to drink and snack on while they're doing it. And I think that what you provide to drink and snack on is your content. You give them something to react to and react with that they can't get from anywhere else, and then we'll let them have some fun with it and get out of their way. And this can be a little hard. Again, it's definitely a different model because it's not really talking about writing a message or creating a message or delivering a message in a traditional, maybe marketing sense. I don't know how many of you guys work in marketing offices where you kind of have branding or message calendars or things that are a little more formalized. It's definitely not that. It's more about the conversations that people are having with each other around you. And you have an important role to play, but you are not the person that's sort of sending stuff out and then that's it and nothing happens with it. And that's the good thing about it, but it's also the different thing, a potentially scary thing about it. So another tip I would give folks in our office that has worked well with us, how many people work in a communications marketing area? About half. And how many work in an IT area or something else? Half and half? Yeah, that's true. It's not really both, is it? Or it's not either or. In our communications area, I've asked, and some of the folks that I work with have done this just because they want to, that if you're trying this out, if you're starting something, it might be an idea to experiment with your own personal social media presence first rather than your institutions. Because it's sometimes, and I'll get to this a little later too, it's sometimes a little murky trying to figure out what your institution's presence on Twitter is as opposed to yourself. So our publicists, some of our younger publicists, for example, they'll start a Twitter account for themselves, and then there's lots of resources on Twitter to help a PR professional actually do their job. That's the argument that I make for Twitter all the time when people ask, why do you even do this? Why are you on Twitter? I learn something new every day on Twitter that helps me do my job, is my, you know, standard response to that. I consider it like a professional development tool. Sure, it gets distracting sometimes and people, you know, when people are talking about the fun stuff too, but that's also part of learning about someone's personality and knowing them as a person, because all of this stuff is all about people and persons. But at the end of the day, I do learn something new every day that helps me do my job. I didn't know anything about the new changes to Facebook groups. I didn't know anything about the new Twitter. I was like the, you know, last person on the earth to get new Twitter. Probably not, but I felt like it. And I don't really use it, so it doesn't really matter. when Google canceled Google Wave, when we had an earthquake in Rochester, like everything that happens, I kind of find out about it, whether it's breaking news or something specific in because of the people I follow. The people I follow are tweeting about this stuff, and then I get to hear about it, and I hopefully get to contribute something useful every now and again myself too. But I do learn something new every day that helps me do my job. And for our folks in our PR office who've been, you know, excited to try it, they've kind of done the same thing. There's a couple of resources for those of you in PR. The one that I'm most familiar with is called Help a Reporter Out, H-A-R-O. And reporters will use that service. I guess it's actually, yeah, it is more of a service. They submit it to the Harrow account, and then it gets tweeted out under the Harrow Help a Reporter Out name. They'll just send out media requests for things. You know, I need, and you can, I think there are different lists for different categories, but they'll say something like, I need two undergraduate students to talk about the impact of the economy on financial aid, or I need a college administrator who can talk intelligently about the student loan scandal, and I need it in an hour, because they're always on deadline. And we've had a couple of minor hits from that. You know, if you've got someone who can legitimately answer that call, and you find, it's just like someone cold calling your office, except now they're sending it out through this service, and if you've got a good person that can respond, and can respond quickly, it's a good way to get your job done. It's just another tool that you can use to get your job done. So if you're uncomfortable with starting with something as big and murky as your college's presence, see what you can do with yourself. See what you can do with your own personal presence, and see if that gives you some ideas about what you could do with your institution's presence. Another strategy that I've employed a few times now is the sort of pilot program. I love the word pilot program. I just think it means like, we're just gonna do something. We're just gonna try it out, it's just an experiment. And sometimes the word pilot program or experiment is a little more palatable. So try a pilot program, one specific event, something concrete that's happening in real time, in real space on your campus, like this conference. The first time I kind of saw Twitter take over this conference in 2008, it was like, this is adding a whole new layer and level at which to experience the content conference, and I'm actually getting as much out of it, or a different kind of stuff out of it, than I am physically being at the sessions. I was using it as a note-taking tool. I was basically like getting other people's notes. You know, everyone else is in the four sessions. I'm only in one. I get to see everybody else's notes while I take my own. Awesome. That's perfect. That's like, there's suddenly five of me, and I get to go to all the, and they're smarter than me, and they're telling people what they think about the sessions they're in. But if you try something like that on your campuses, I think it's better to kind of focus on it and call it a pilot program if that helps. Try one specific event like commencement, or in our case, reunion weekend. Last year was the first year we tried to do sort of a social media rollout for reunion weekend, which in our campus is called Meliora weekend. And this year, unfortunately, our reunion weekend is this weekend coming up on Friday. So I have to go back to work on Thursday and go right to Meliora weekend, I know. Last year it was before the conference, it's usually before the conference, this year it's after. But this year we've got like a social media team, we've got four people who are gonna be live tweeting from the different events. At U of R, our reunion weekend is kind of a intellectual reunion weekend. Here we have like lots of, we have a football game, we kind of have a football team, and they play a game. we have reunions, we have alumni come back, but it's mainly built around a series of speakers. So it's like this, you know, there's lots of talks going on. They bring in, you know, people to do lectures. So we're gonna be live tweeting from different events. We're gonna be posting photos to Flickr, much like we're doing at this conference with Anne's photos, having a live feed on the alumni site of the pictures coming in. I don't think we're gonna do anything with video. We couldn't really make the case for video. There's still a little bit of scared of just shooting video and uploading it to a site like YouTube. But we are going to do photos. We're going to do Twitter. And there's sort of four of us who kind of divvied out the calendar to kind of cover events and keep on top of things. And we've kind of sold it as, you know, we just want to try this out. We've all been to events where this has really worked. We think, you know, we've promoted the hashtag. We put the hashtag on all the materials. We've got a Foursquare location. Have no clue if anyone's going to check in or use it or do anything useful with it. But why not? Why not try? You work in higher ed. If you screw up, who's going to find out? That's a quote from TSAN. I think it's true. I mean, it's not 100% true. But I think we do have a little more, we have the luxury of a little bit more flexibility than maybe if you were working for, you know, in private business where they're a little probably less capable or willing to give up on the control versus authenticity side. And maybe in our worlds, that flexibility exists a little bit more. I don't know, I haven't worked for a corporate person in a long time, so I may be completely wrong on that. But pilot programs, I think, are a good strategy. If you're trying to get started, pick something narrow, pick something focused. And this is something a little new that I'm trying with the U of R account that I wanted to bring up. I was able to successfully make the case that we should be more personal and less institutional on our university's Twitter account. And this was the book that kind of convinced me about that. It's called Twitterville by Shel Israel. It's a really great book that basically it's sort of, again, it's targeted to businesses, but it spells out lots of case studies from companies about what they've done, specifically on Twitter, and successes that they've had, everything from small nonprofits to big, huge, you know, Fortune 500 companies. And his big thing is the idea that if you're on Twitter, you are a human being. I am a logo. I'm not a logo. I am not a logo. I am a free man. That the people who are behind your Twitter account are people. No one's automatically writing things unless you've got some RSS feed set up to spit things out, and if you do, please stop. unless it's maybe sports scores or something. But the people who are tweeting things to an institutional account are still people. So why are you pretending that they're not? And is there value in showing that they are? And it kind of took a little bit of a back and forth in my own head to kind of figure that out. But in August of this year, this is a post on my blog. If you go, you can check out a little bit more detail about what I was thinking when I made this change. To paraphrase John Stewart, be an effing person, that we're all people, so just be a person. Just acknowledge that you're a person. And to be honest, when we set it up, you know, there's our little logo, there's our U of R, Rocky. And I kind of liked the idea that there was an institutional face and that it wasn't me. Because who am I to speak for the university was kind of my feeling. Like, I can hide behind the logo. But then, after reading this and hearing other people talk about that, I kind of thought, well, I am speaking for the university. I send things out under the university's official Twitter. We describe it as, this is the official University of Rochester Twitter account. And 9 times out of 10, it's me, unless it's my assistant when I'm not there. Vermilion or Weekend, it'll be 4 of us. But it is just me. So why don't I kind of acknowledge that? And then I can say, when someone asks a question or has a complaint or is just spouting off about something, which doesn't happen too often, but I can acknowledge that, hey, I'm just a woman who works in Wallace Hall, and I'm going to do what I can to help you, but I'm not like the University of Rochester, who's, you know, the biggest employer in the region, and who am I to speak for them? So I think we've only been doing it since the end of August. I think it's freed up a lot about how we can talk about it. Our followers have gone up since I've done this, but I have no idea whether that's because of this or just because the semester started, to be honest. There's no cause and effect. I did it right at the end of August, so there was probably going to be a natural uptick in followers once people were back anyway. But we have had an increase in followers at a more precipitous rate than we had before. And I just think it's made it easier to think about how to use the Twitter tool to communicate. It was always a little bit, I knew what I was using Twitter for. I knew what it meant for me to be on Twitter and how I was responding to people. I was always less clear what it meant for the University of Rochester to be on Twitter. It always felt weird. And now it feels a lot less weird. Now I can, you know, post, you know, a picture of goofy stuff that is happening, or I'll have some examples in a sec. But I can do it in a way that feels more natural, because it is. Sure. I don't sign my posts, but I rewrote the bio that you see on the Twitter page. I didn't use my last name. I really don't know why, because it'll take someone 2 seconds to find out who I am. But I changed the bio to say, this is the official University of Rochester Twitter feed. My name is Lori. I work in Wallace Hall. I'm your head twit, something like that. So that's what the bio says. So that's where my name comes in. And then for Meliora Weekend, I'll maybe show you the live Twitter feed page in a minute. But we updated the profile picture again. For Meliora Weekend, because there's 4 of us, we took a new profile picture of the 4 of us. And we're holding that hat. I think I'm going to start using that hat as kind of like a talisman, or a little kind of cool thing to add to photos and stuff. It gets the R up there nice and graphically, and it also is just fun, I think. But so we've got the 4 of us, and 1 of us is holding the hat out in front. And when I changed the picture, I wrote, you know, Meliora Weekend is on Friday. Your Twitter team for the next few days is Lori, Sabra, Bree, and Michelle, and then put our initials after it. So then when Bree types something, she'll write Bree. and when I do, I'll write me. And then when I'm out of the office, I'll say, Lori's out of the office and Don will be tweeting. So yeah, we've only been doing this for like 2 months now, but that's how we've done it so far. So here are some, I'm gonna show a few examples of some interactions that have happened since I did this change. So this is someone who, it turns out, is an alumnus who says, I really hate to say this, but I miss U of R. That's our Twitter name. Mainly a meal plan, even if their food was absolutely terrible. And the other thing I do is, you know, if someone tweets that, I see it in my mentions column, I go and look up who he is. He's an alumnus, so I follow him back. And sometimes they get all proud. They're like, oh, my alma mater's following me. They get all excited that someone's following them. So then I replied, I don't know, I think we have some fairly decent eating establishments with a twit pic of our vending machines. That's where I eat lunch most days. That's the vending area in what we call the garden level, which is really the basement of Wallace Hall. See, you know what? I don't know if they knew, and if they did, my argument back would be, I mean, he replied back saying it gets old. I lived out of them while I was studying for my physical chem test. I don't know why. I hope that dining wouldn't have a problem with that, and I honestly don't know why they would. It's a college. It's food. Everyone, the only thing that keeps our campus together as a cohesive unit is that everybody hates the parking and the food. Everything else is so decentralized. If you can't complain about food at a university, but I mean, if that's the thing you're going to get upset about, I think that's kind of, but it's interesting. Yeah, you're right that there would be, there could be some folks who live and breathe that more than me who would be less sanguine about the fact that people are complaining about the meal plan. So another thing I've started doing is called the daily twit pic. So I'll actually take my little phone and go out and take a picture. I always have it with me. And if I see something on campus that's either beautiful, you know, like a nice building, or strange or different, I'll post a picture and call it the daily twit pic. And they get about, it's not huge again, but I'm kind of the why not school. They only get about between 100 and 120 views. If you go to twit pic, it'll let you see the clicks. So it's not a massive number. We have about, I want to say, 1,400 followers of our Twitter account at the U of R, the institutional one. So it's not a huge number, but I hope it grows over time. And if it doesn't, it's not a huge investment of time, although it is part of that resources question. It's definitely scope creep. Sometimes it'll be like, oh, it's 2:00, I haven't done the daily twit pic, and I have to like think of some reason to go to the library so I can kill two birds with one stone, go over and get something done, and then take a picture and come back. So for this one, this is a tricky one. Can you guess where this is? Sometimes I'll do little quizzes or I'll ask people to guess. And then this guy he's a student, and he's an undergraduate student. He's studying abroad. So he replied, that was tongue-in-cheek, right? Only a month till I get back on campus. Definitely get it ready. So it's kind of like building excitement. He's not here. He's out in South Africa. He's studying abroad. So he sees that and thinks it's funny and responds. Again, can I measure the monetary value of that exchange? No. I wish I could, but I have no idea how I'd begin to do that. But he's a very active person on Twitter, and he responds back and forth. And if you have a little bit of goodwill with an active, vocal student, I don't see why that's a bad thing. We've moved to the bonus presentation, talking your boss out of Twitter. Does anyone have any questions about anything that we've talked about before now? Yeah, Mike? True. I mean, we were only on Twitter for less than a year before this, and we had a small, I think part of it's an upside and a downside. Part of the reason we're allowed to kind of get away with things, and I would say that I probably do get away with things, is because people don't realize how interesting, important, fun, powerful they can possibly be yet. So I'm trying to kind of lay the groundwork for what I think it can be and want it to be before people start to notice. I absolutely, of course, had my boss's approval to make that change. And he was skeptical about it at first and asked me to come in and describe it a little bit more. I wouldn't do something like that on my own at all. But since I did that, my for the Melior Weekend, for example, when we were pitching this idea of a team, I told the guy who runs Melior Weekend, or I asked the guy who runs Melior Weekend, if we really want to do this, can we identify the four people who are going to be in charge of it, and then leave them alone. You've picked the right people. We all work here. We all love the place. We're all excited about Meliora Weekend. Just pick us and leave us alone. The alumni folks and the advancement folks are a lot more, they're a lot more about message calendars and approvals, and I need to see the language. That was the email we kept getting back from this guy. And he's a great guy, and he's very excited about trying it. But I always be like, could you send me the language on the Foursquare announcement, or could you send me the language on the live tweets? I'm like, no, I can't send you the language on the live tweets. The thing hasn't happened yet. But he's, for him, I wanted to get to a place where he was comfortable saying, okay, these are the four people that have said they're going to do it, and now go ahead. And that's where we're at. I wouldn't have done it otherwise. I didn't want to have to like get individual tweets or schedules or anything like that approved by anybody but us. So we've been able to sort of successfully make that case, partly because I think they're not really paying attention yet. But when they start paying attention, I want to have that grounding established a little bit. So it wasn't a big change because we hadn't been doing it for too long in the first place. I was going to say, we did a lot of construction photos. We had made jokes about, it's summer in Rochester. Of course, every campus is the same, where you've got the parking lots are being paved and Wilson for us, the big excitement, honestly, and it was a one-off, but they completely shut down the student union over the summer and renovated it. So it was closed. The whole building was closed. And they did a big renovation. And then when it opened, it was completely different. And the dining area was called the Pit. And it's called the Pit for a reason. And now it's not called the Pit anymore. It's called the Commons. But of course, everybody still calls it the Pit. And it looks really nice. So we were doing like stage photos. And photos on both Twitter and Facebook, our audience is almost 50-50, I would say, alumni. Like alumni is a little bit more than 50% of our audience base. And it makes sense if you think about it. There are people that have a connection to the place, but aren't physically at the place anymore. So for people who are at the place, for current students, we have current students too, of course, if you just go by the age demographics on Facebook. But they're already here. They're doing their thing. They're experiencing the place. They're busy. They've got classes. For the people who are gone, who are trying to maintain connections, I would say think about alumni and the kind of things that they would like to see over the summer, because you're right, over the summer there isn't actually anything. So there's often not a lot of events or things happening. But just beautiful pictures of traditional, here's the, we have a carving of a wood carving of a yellow jacket. That's one of our kind of symbols. So a picture of that at sunset, or something that gets them feeling nostalgic and connected to the place that they like or they love, or they wouldn't be following you. That seems to have worked out so far. And photos often have more of a conversation around them than text can. I guess that's a nice segue to this next segment about, when do you need a Facebook page, or when do you want a Facebook page or a Twitter account? We haven't had that because the institutional Twitter account, the one that I manage, is basically most of the time just me and one other person. And now for the first time we're bringing in this group. But it's kind of like the adage about movie making. If you get the right cast, you just kind of leave them to it. That's kind of my approach. Like if you've hired the right person, you hope, and you've asked them to do something, you wouldn't have asked them to do it if you didn't think they were capable of doing it. And if something happens that isn't following what the expectations are or what you thought was appropriate, at that point you can, have a chat with the person involved. But I think the bigger thing to get right is just having the right person who's doing it and trusting them, because you wouldn't have asked them to do it in the first place. I think it's great to have student workers. I wish I had some. I don't. I think it'd be great to have student workers doing this kind of stuff. Just hire good students. And there's a lot of good kids who will, have fun, have personality with things, and, not post their love of Justin Bieber on the university's Facebook account. There might even be a legitimate reason to post your love of Justin Bieber on a university Twitter account. Can't think of one, but there might be. So I kind of added this to the end of this for this year, because it's another flip side of that conversation as well, where I'll get people who ask me to explain social media things and what, what's good about them. But then I also get the phone call from parking, and this is true, the phone call from parking saying, can we have a Facebook page? And I kind of think, okay. Before I move into this, though, I am just, to be on the record, I'm kind of the opinion that any office, we don't have what I would call a university-wide social media policy. Maybe we should. Maybe that's something we need to look at. I know there's been a lot of conversation about that with all of us, all of you guys. But we don't. And I am kind of the opinion that if an individual office or academic department has a reason for doing something and has a community they think that thinks it's sustainable, that has a community that'll appreciate it, go for it. if the English department wants a Twitter account called You Are English, why not? If they're going to use it for classes, if they're going to use it for their events, why is that a, I don't have a problem with that. And so far my boss doesn't either, but we'll see. What the problem becomes, I think, is when people feel like they have to be on a particular website or platform or application. They have to have a Facebook page, they have to have a Twitter account, they have to have a YouTube channel. So you'll get the phone call from parking saying, can we have a Facebook page? Hi, I was wondering if you can help me, my office needs a Facebook page. And they know that I do the university's Facebook page, so I get the phone call. So my answer back, okay, how many times a day are you updating your website now? Blank stares. Like, if you're not updating your actual, if you don't have enough content to keep a website fresh, what are you gonna do on a real-time social channel that needs a lot more care and feeding than maybe your website does? What's going there? This is not a Facebook page, again, it's not a set it and forget it thing. It needs care and love, it needs care and feeding, it needs cocktails and nibbles. You need to provide that. Who in your office is gonna do that? And you have to wanna do it. You can't do it because you think you're supposed to or because you think you have to. You have to really want to be on the platform and everything that entails. This goes back to the first story with our president. If he wanted to be on Facebook, if he wanted to have his niece friend him and share pictures of the trustee's wedding and, you know, create groups around whatever, absolutely, great. If you don't want to do those things, don't be on Facebook, because that's part of what you do on Facebook. So you have to actually want to be in the space. And then my last little tidbit, not an original thought at all, but still never goes out of style, goals, not tools. You have to know, there's sort of a question, like, do you need a strategy before you go into these things, or should you just do it? I'm definitely of the just do it variety, often because I think you don't know what something's usable for or interesting, or what's interesting about it until you start playing with it. So if you get approval to do it, you should just definitely just do it. But you should have something in mind that you're trying to achieve through it, and you should be quick to abandon it if you don't think it's getting there. Things like Facebook and Twitter could become the next web, possibly, the next social web, or they could, you know, any individual company or website could disappear tomorrow. Ask Robin about Google Wave. It could just go away, nothing. But I would argue on the social side that the idea that we're using the web to connect with individual people in interesting ways on the web and on our mobile devices is not going away, even if particular companies and software packages and platforms change. So that idea is here to stay, I think, that one of the key uses of the web as a set of technologies is to connect with individual people on a personal level. How institutions find their feet in that space, how brands find their feet in that space is the tricky part at the moment. That's a good question. I've never deleted it. I mean, you can. It's technically possible to remove a Facebook page. I never have. And I don't really know what the threshold would have to be to make that decision, because you're right. The first thing I would do if I were to notice it would be, you know, I notice you haven't been posting anything to your Facebook page lately. Are you struggling with content ideas, or have you found that it's not meeting your needs? Can we just delete it? Maybe ask them the question. And if they had some access to their insights, they can see what they're active. The insights panel in Facebook gives you a lot of data about just individual use of it. Are people even visiting it anymore? If you've got some data, you can go back to them with and say, this looks like it's not really generating a lot of activity. Have you considered deleting it? I'm sorry, I forgot to mention that there's a great, and this will be posted with my conference materials, there's a great little one-sheeter that Rachel Rubin, now of Ithaca College, has shared in the past, and that she got that was shared with her by Queen's University. That she calls a social media brief, and it's five questions about. It's basically answering the we need a Facebook page, and it's like, okay, who's going to maintain it in your office? How often do you think you're going to need to update it? What materials do you think you have now to update it with? How much help do you need creating it? It's like four or five questions that has saved me from the parking people. I will say, has saved, like, our HR office wanted a Facebook page, which I just thought, and the reason they wanted a Facebook page was because they were worried about sort of recruiting and they wanted to have a presence on Facebook. Like, you perform a very important service for the university. That does not translate to, I need a Facebook page. What would you do on Facebook that would help you do this service? Maybe there's a good answer to that, but they didn't have one, so they shouldn't have a Facebook page. People that I've kind of talked down, I'll say, have been grateful to be like, okay, we want to, because it comes from a place of, you know, fear is too strong a word, but it's, you know, they feel like they're not doing something that they should be doing. And when you kind of reassure them that you really don't have to do this, you have to, you know, be able to do it and have a reason to do it if you want to, but you really don't have to as a unit. And exactly what you said, I'll say, if you ever have anything that you think should go on the university's Facebook page, send it to me and I'll consider it. And if it, you know, it goes out to the whole community, you don't have to create your own necessarily. And so far, the two departments that I've kind of talked out of it have been grateful that they've been talked out of it, I'd say. But that's kind of the response that I've given to them. I think I'm done. Cool. Thanks, guys. I'm available for questions or anything afterwards.